Welcome, everybody, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks here on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about our experiences in the world. And I'm quite excited because today I have Bruce Rawls back with me. And as you know, we've been listening to lots of excerpts of different workshops, which I love to do. But it's also wonderful to have one of my fellow students and teacher of A Course in Miracles on the show. It's always nice to be able to do that. So welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you, CA. I always enjoy our conversations immensely.
I do too. And Bruce agreed that he would like to talk about the workshop that we have been listening to, which is called Toy Story, The Ego's Idols of Specialness. Now, this was an original workshop that was given by Ken Wapnick in July of 2012. It was released by the Foundation in June of 2021. So I hopped right on that, Bruce, and got it from the Foundation as soon as I saw the announcement. And I've just been pleased as punch with this particular workshop. And I listen and I go, this is the best workshop ever, you know? And I'm sure people listening to the show go, she says that every time. I think it's just a testament really to Ken's ability to make the material fresh, to make it applicable, and, you know, just being in the right place at the right time to hear it. Because once again, I couldn't even keep up with, as I'm listening to the workshop and deciding which excerpts are going to go on the show, I am literally like typing up a storm. You know, it's like, oh, that's great. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's great. And then I end up with pages and pages of notes. And it's almost as if I have transcribed the workshop into my notes. But that's how it feels to me. Like, oh, I can't forget this. I can't forget that. This is great stuff. This is wonderful. So that's how Toy Story has seemed to me. Just like really wonderful, wonderful stuff.
Indeed. And I appreciate you putting that on 1-2 Radio too, because when I can't listen to live, I'll go back and listen to the replays, and it's like, yeah, this is really good stuff. And in response to your comment regarding, you know, Ken's material, just to be only slightly contrary and just for fun. I actually this is a pretty minor one. I have loved everything Ken's ever done. The audios and videos in particular, they're all equally outstanding, and they're all summa cum laude in my book. The only book that I have that to me is a little bit more pedantic, and this is just strictly referring to his written material, is the Love Does Not Condemn, which is the one about the kind of the comparative religion. And it's really interesting. But I think I would have to say that if somebody is just starting to study the Course, or even if they've studied it for a while, but they're not really that interested in the historical precedent and the biblical and early religious references, they could probably skip that one.
Okay, all right.
And I'm actually only about halfway through it, so I'm probably judging it without having read the entire thing. But it's really good. I actually have two copies of it, so if anybody is interested,
let them know. Let Bruce know.
And I'll get you that other copy. But anyway, it's actually, like everything Ken does, is impeccably written and brilliant. It's just a little bit more scholarly. That's probably the only thing I can think of that isn't, you know, in the superlative category, you know, and highly recommend for any course student of for anything that Ken has done. So,
You know, speaking of that, I mean, Ken really was a scholar.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, no doubt about it, he really was. And for many of us, that's just not what we want to get into. And you know, I've said this before, but when I first started studying the Course, a friend really encouraged me to listen to things that Ken had done, or read his works, or watch, you know, YouTube videos, etc. You know, some equivalent of that. I don't even know if YouTube was up. But anyway, I just couldn't get into it. I mean, I think I watched a few minutes and I thought, oh my God, this guy is so dry, you know, and that's it. It was scholarly and he's talking about all this stuff. But I also recognize it was my resistance, because I had been, you know, what Ken talks about, you know, I've been through the kind of spiritual smorgasbord. And so I didn't want one more thing. You know, I was very resistant to the course. I didn't want one more thing. And so, so I also really insisted on, I want to read it for myself. I don't want this guy and his dry, scholarly stuff telling me what to think about A Course in Miracles. But the irony is, once I had read the course and then was able to see Ken in person, it was like, oh my God, he's nothing like I thought he was. And in fact, he was so, I thought, funny.
Yep,
you know,
yeah,
I thought his sense of humor was incredible. Oh, and
I was just going to say, I get that from, I never personally met Ken. I missed him by about a year and a half, getting finally down to Temecula. Reading his material, one could get that impression that it was dry and scholarly. And yet, like you say, when you listen to the audios and the video and watch the videos, particularly the ones where he's interacting rather than the monologues with people in the audience, and especially during the Q&A sessions, his playfulness and his gentleness and his wonderful sense of humor comes across so vividly. It's
Oh, it really does. Like I said, he felt like a completely different person. And then I thought, well, should I go back and try to watch some of those things? Was I just crazy? Or, you know, was he a different person? But I think part of it is, you know, like even now, sometimes if I go to the YouTube videos, which many of them I think are wonderful, but he'll be sitting in a straight back chair with a plant next to him. And, you know, automatically I'm thinking it just doesn't even look like him. You know, so it is kind of a setup for this scholarly discussion. But you put him in front of people where he's interacting. And that gentleness, playfulness, and that sense of humor is just incredible.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's also a testament to how, I'll speak for myself. Years ago, I was taking an Afro-Cuban drumming class in Northern California from a wonderful teacher named Bob Scarlett. I haven't talked to Bob in years. Hope he's still doing that. Wonderful opportunity to just learn about harmonies with drums and polyrhythms, and it was a lot of fun too. It was just something I looked forward to every week, and I dragged my little conga drum in the back of my car and set it up and with 6 to 12 other drummers, and we'd have a blast. And then I'd get the thing home, and the idea of just banging on the drum by myself, it just didn't do anything for me. And it was just kind of like a nice object lesson, and it's the shared interest. It's the harmony, and the melody and not the notes.
Yes.
You know, because I was just one note, you know, so to speak. and it was like, well, what's the point of that? I mean, the whole fun was doing it together.
Right.
And I found that to be true too. In doing things for YouTube myself is like, you know, when I'm just presenting a monologue, it's like, yeah, I can have fun with it, but it's not nearly the fun as it is like what you and I are doing right now, is having a conversation, and that's been consistent with my experience and perhaps yours too.
Yes, and that's a really good lesson and how you learned it, that why isn't this fun when I'm doing it by myself?
Yeah.
And it's because you're doing it by yourself. It's a wonderful group exercise, or when you can harmonize with somebody else, interact with somebody else, life feels like a different something.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the synergy of mm-hmm. the shared interest and the idea that we're together or not at all kind of thing, is the course puts it. And the not at all really is the toys. I mean, if you think, you know, what you give a child to amuse them when their friends aren't around, is you give them toys, right?
Right. That's right. That's right.
And then they usually get tired with that, the toys, at some point, if they, you know, the ones that haven't yet been broken, and then it's like, well, now what kind of thing? And I think that's the place we all have to get in our lives, where we recognize the toys of specialness and the toys of, you know, the separate interests, and realize, you know, at some point it's just not doing it for me anymore. And I think that's when the course becomes more meaningful, as it would seem.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, and I had an interesting experience recently, and I know this may or may not go along right with our discussion of the toys, but one thing I've been working on is, you know, just consistently trying to make it a little simpler. You know, when I wake up in the morning, it's like, you know, I want to choose the right teacher. Let's not make this complicated. I don't need to do 20 things. I just need to choose the right teacher. I need to remember that, choose the right teacher. And also, remember that that teacher doesn't care if I eat toast for breakfast or pancakes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a matter of fix my world, tell me what to do, give me specific guidance. Asking for specific guidance is missing the point. But one thing I kind of keep thinking of is I recognize I am one of these people, I'd rather just kind of move from this point forward. I don't want to go back to the past. I don't want to kind of dredge up old things. And yet there are places in the course where I think, you know, it kind of negates that. It says, no, if you really haven't dealt with those issues, they're just going to come around again.
Yeah.
And so I was with a group of new people because, you know, I just moved. And this is wonderful, but I live on a cul-de-sac. And with the exception of one couple who live at the very corner, everybody else, they're all friends.
Uh-huh.
And so it's an it's an interesting dynamic because, of course, I'm the new kid on the block, literally. And, you know, wondering, am I going to blend in? Am I going to be the oddball? And in some ways I am, because the other thing that's distinctive is of 11 houses, I'm the only one that isn't a couple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so at first it was like, well, where's your husband? It's like, I don't have one. and so that way, and I thought, okay, is this going to be like a deal breaker? Because they're all couples and they do all these social things together.
Uh-huh.
But this week, all the girls decided that they would go out to dinner. So, of course, they invite me and I go along. You know, it's like, this is going to be fun. And it was. But somehow the topic of travel came up and I was recounting something that I had done, like literally in my 20s. So we're talking what, you know, hate to say it, but 40 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. And all of a sudden, I found my voice escalating and getting higher. And I just, I could feel the emotion growing because it was an experience that was beautiful and wonderful. But it was one of those major forgiveness lessons. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wow. I mean, I could tell. It's like, I am getting so overly excited about the things that went wrong with this trip. And yes, it was beautiful, but look at this. And how did that happen? And darn it, don't judge me. And blah, blah, blah. And I kind of stopped and I said, whoa, I guess I have some, like, forgiveness lessons. Or I said something like that. And one of the women kind of smiled. She goes, yeah, it sounds like you got to let go of something. And literally, we're laughing. But I'm like, really, CA? I mean, I could not believe that I got that animated and that excited. And I'm not going to say upset, because not upset, but it was obvious that I hadn't let that go.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a part of me that just kind of smiled with Jesus, because I could hear him saying, see, we can kind of bring up some of these things and you're going to be okay.
Yeah,
you're
going
to be okay. You can look at this and you can let that go and you can forgive yourself and look at it differently. But there was a part of me that said, look, if this is going to be psychotherapy and I have to keep bringing up old issues, I'm not sure I want to do this.
Yeah, and I think that part of the trust that's asked for is to, you know, not have to – you don't need a backhoe. This is a friend of mine and I have this conversation on a fairly frequent basis. You know, we don't really need backhoes to dredge up old stuff. Just the process of going forward with our lives will bring up things that, if there are archetypal issues that need to be addressed that we haven't been addressed, they'll come up. And you know, they may take a different form, but the content will be the same. And you'll recognize them, you know, just like, you know, if you see somebody who reminds you, you know, decades later, someone you knew in grade school, high school, college, 20s or 30s or whatever, and maybe they remind you of similar issues you had with a certain subject of whatever, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. it'll come up, right? You know?
Yeah. And that's a good analogy. You don't need a backhoe, but if something needs to come up, it's going to come up. And that is how, that's not the only thing that's come up recently. Mm-hmm. And yet there again, on one hand, it's like, wow, yeah, I guess I could let that go.
Right.
You know, that you know, or what does that have to do with what's going on with me now? And one thing I do recognize right away is that those things all become the story of our lives. And that's why maybe we need to forgive them and let them go, because they're a piece of the story that you still want to tell about yourself. Look what happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what happened to me. Look at how I was taken advantage of, or look at what, you know, how I was inept at dealing with a situation. And that's part of the story, and maybe CA, you can let go of that story. Maybe yeah. you can change that label, that identity. You've had it long enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's our toy stories. Interestingly enough, when you're talking about noticing your story, it reminds me of this is actually, gosh, now I think it might be a couple of decades ago for me too. I remember one of my episodes. Well, I guess it was 2004. I'd gone to Sedona, Arizona, to give some talks on sacred geometry at a conference there. And on my way back, some friends that I met there said, "Oh, rather than try to drive, like a crazy person, just we got an extra bedroom." This one guy says, "You're welcome to stay there." And so that was great. And and then they were up in the Northern California foothills where I lived a year or so later, and said, "Hey, can you show us around?" And I said, "I'll be happy to." And so when they came by and visited when I lived there, I was showing around and giving them a tour of some of the things they might be interested in, and I realized that I was like bored almost to tears hearing myself talk about these things that were kind of been there, done that. And I was trying not to be a wet blanket on any of this, but I was kind of thinking, well, yeah, that was interesting, but I'm more interested in other things now. But they were having a good time, and they appreciated me taking them around. But it was interesting, just kind of notice my own thought processes of how, it's like, not only just the been there, done that, but it was like, I no longer was interested in that story. And I think we have to kind of outgrow those stories at some point, and just like we outgrow our toys of specialness that Ken's wonderful program talks about. And I looked up the word toy in the course using the new wonderful new web edition, which you can get to by going to acim.org/acim, and I just put in toy in the search, a little magnifying glass, and I get 31 results. So there's, in addition to all your copious notes that you could draw from playing Ken's workshop, it's a backup. We've got 31 instances of the word toy in the course. May I read one of them?
Yes, but okay. What I would ask before, the reason I'm hesitating, before you read that, would you back up and tell people once again what you're talking about with that searchable web version of the course? So
yes.
I want to make sure that didn't just fly by people and they're going, what, where, what, So
yeah,
tell them exactly what that is and where they can find it.
You betcha. And it is in the entire course, including the two supplements, the Song of Prayer and the psychotherapy it's not really a book. The
pamphlet.
It's called the pamphlet.
Yes.
Supplement. And so all three volumes plus the preface and the supplements are there online. And this has been out now for, I think, about 3 months now. And I've been actually using it for well over a year because I was fortunate enough and happy to be a beta tester. And I watched it evolve over a year's time, and it's continuing to evolve. So in future iterations, it's going to have even more cool stuff. But even right out of the box, when it was announced, just earlier this year, it's wonderful. I mean, because it leapfrogs everything else out there, and it's a great complement if you have the print version to have at the side of your desk, to have this on your screen. And so when I'm attending study groups and classes online, almost sometimes more than daily basis, I will pull this up, and if someone starts reciting a favorite quote from the course, I just type it in and go right to it rather than having to what page was that again. It's just wonderful. The search capabilities and the fact that the entire course is there, including the supplements, is just wonderful. So if you go to acim.org, which is the Foundation for Inner Peace website, you will see a new highlighted item in the navigation. It's read the course. Let me go there right now so I can get the correct jargon. Or alternatively, if you want to go straight to it, just go to acim.org/acim. The new item in the menu has a little star, which is the logo for the foundation, just says read ACIM. and then the first option is entire ACIM Web Edition, and it'll also take you there.
Nice.
And it'll you'll see that it's ACIM/EN that it goes to. You don't have to remember that because it'll go there automatically. So this is the English version. So there's 27 other languages, with which the Spanish is well underway, and several other languages, you know, to follow, plus the ability to take notes. And but one of the things that's really cool right out of the chute, this is something that Felix Alcala, who was the genius behind this and also an avid course student, you know, he and Tara Hollander put this together for the most part, and with, you know, the rest of us mostly being cheerleaders and enthusiastic supporters. What Felix did, which is something he mentioned to me about 5-6 years ago now, I thought, well, this is going to be so cool. And now it's there, is if you grab any quote from this web edition, it will not only get a link back to the course so you can put it in context in an email or a website or a blog post or what have you, but it'll also have the correct annotation as well. So you don't have to scratch your head and figure out how the annotation works, which admittedly, even though it's very well thought out, it can be a little tricky, especially when you get to some of the what is in the workbook and chapter 19 that's got all these subsections and things. But it'll figure all that out for you, so you don't have to. And then that annotation, just one more thing before we get back to our topic. What's neat about the annotation is it's true for any language, any of the 27 plus and counting languages that the course has been translated into, and it's true for any edition. So regardless of whether you're on a print edition or Kindle or whatever, it's true. It'll give you the correct reference that's exactly the same regardless of any of those parameters, which is really neat.
Really so, nice. And for clarification, though, because I talk about the foundation for A Course in Miracles so often, all of Ken's materials and Ken's foundation is facim.org. And
correct.
What Bruce is talking about is A Course in Miracles, or the Foundation for Inner Peace, which
correct.
Publishes the course,
uh-huh.
and they are acim.org.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
So
now, read one of your things.
I think of them as the two sister organizations that work at hand to help give us this wonderful, amazing curriculum, which we call the course.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So here's the first instance that I found using this, putting just the word toy into the little magnifying glass of the web edition of the course. And the first of the 31 results is from chapter 20 in the text. And this one, it actually refers to Easter, but it's applicable any time of the year. And it says, "This Easter, look with different eyes upon your brother. You have forgiven me, and yet I cannot use your gift of lilies," which is a symbol for innocence, "while you see them not. Nor can you use what I have given unless you share it. The Holy Spirit's vision is no idle gift, no plaything to be tossed about a while and laid aside. Listen and hear this carefully, nor think it but a dream, a careless thought to play with, or a toy you would pick up from time to time and then put by. For if you do, so will it be to you." So here's his pep talk and encouragement to say, you know, you think you might, if, you know, you might may have been studying the course for a few years, or in my case, a few decades, and you know, you've kind of noticed some benefits. And he says, but that's a drop in the bucket compared to what it's going to be for us when we make it something less like a hobby and more like, this is how I see everything, you know, and the thought system I use for everything. And we need to be really gentle and patient with ourselves until we get to that point. And I think that's why we get to look at all of our toys and some of those topics resurface until we've forgiven ourselves for our childishness and the silliness, as Ken points out. Is, you know, I love how he says it's not evil, sinful, or wicked. It's just silly that we keep playing with the toys of specialness, the toys of the that come from this belief in separate interests and our authority problem, where we, you know, decided as a petulant child to storm out of the mind of perfect oneness and into our own little private kingdoms, and pick up the toys of a separate identity and all the incredibly varied ways that we use special relationships, special love and special hate with everyone and everything to play with, instead of giving ourselves our birthright, the peace that, that comes from setting those aside and not making the course just a hobby, which mm-hmm. was the phrase that came to me the other day. It's like, you know, I have to, I need to go beyond the, being this, this, you know, maybe a long time hobbyist, but it's still sort of a hobby in a sense, because I'm certainly not applying the course the way I know I could 24/7. But I know it's possible and I know it's really where I'm headed. So thank you for the pep talk, Jesus.
Yes. And you know what struck me though when you said it is that in this workshop, Ken actually says the course is a toy. You know, and I mean, when he's really kind of making the point, all your special relationships are toys, whether it's somebody you hate or whether it's somebody you love or whether it's the, you know, the Course in Miracles that is your special book, you know, whatever it is, these are all toys. But the other great thing, and this is what helps me, and I'm not going to articulate it well because that's it. I'm not at the place yet. I totally understand it. It is confusing about, you know, how you go part way up the ladder, how you do it without making this total leap, because it's like, okay, I'm in this sandbox, I'm in this play box, but then he talks about right-minded toys, and see, that helps me understand it a little bit. You know, you're not going from this place of total non-understanding and playing in the sandbox. You slowly but surely have right-minded toys that help you leave the playground. You know, that help you start understanding. So once again, it's like special toys, I guess, but special relationships, special toys. But in some ways, maybe some of the toys are better than others because they help you understand their toys. You know?
Yeah. You know, what comes to mind as you're sharing that is something that has really helped me a lot is, you know, that, that forgiveness is like everything else in time and space, is an illusion. But it's the one illusion, you know, metaphorically, that undoes all the others, and so that's why we need that toy, if we want to refer to it as that, which Ken evidently is doing. It's the one that undoes the belief in separation. So we're really just using the opportunities, all the things that you know, again, no backhoe needed, but you know, when they do surface, we can use every moment of a specific thought as an opportunity to say, oh, I could see peace instead of this, and I'm not upset for the reason I think, because each moment's unique attributes then become a forgiveness classroom rather than an imprisoning toy.
Right. Well, and you know, another idea that he talks about, or that just kind of jumped at me, is, you know, he says, we don't want to be helped. You know, when it really comes down to it, we don't want to be helped. And you know, like he specifically said, don't take my neuroses away from me. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want it to hurt less. I don't want to feel so much pain. Right. But I really don't want to let go yet. I don't want to let go of me. I just can't imagine what it would be like to let go of me. And that really resonated, too, that once again, maybe because I tend to go black and white. And he's like, oh, well, I'm not sure I am ready to let go of this neurosis. Yeah. You know, I do, you know, but as they continually say in many places in the course, you know, eventually the pain is so much we go, I just don't want this pain anymore. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to feel this way or be this way.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think it's easy to think that it's sort of like an analog fader, you know, where you fade something in or you fade something out kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the course in some sense is actually more of a digital. It's a binary thing, and it really is. It's like it's an all or nothing. In any given moment, we're either choosing Holy Spirit or ego. So it's kind of like, you know, slamming against the rails back and forth. You know, in electrical engineering, a digital circuit really has one of two states, whereas an analog can go through all the different voltages in between and, you know, gradually move in and out. And it, you know, you can see these familiar waveforms, but a digital signal is like, it's either on or off. It's,
you know,
it's like a square wave kind of thing. But the mind of that the decision-making mind, I think, as the course puts it, is really gives us an opportunity to see how quickly we can change our minds and go from one thought system to another. So it's like, you know, in any given moment, we might have, you know, a kind thought about this, and then a condemning thought about that, and our minds are so agile that we probably don't even know that we're slamming up and down against the rails of those two thought systems, you know, at an incredible rate sometimes. And so it's really, I think that the emphasis of the course is rather than get all mired in the technicalities of analog versus digital and all, it's just really, can I be more consistently peaceful by choosing the Holy Spirit's thought system more and more often? So, I mean, the nerdy technical jargon would be increasing the duty cycle. So instead of, you know, 1% is Holy Spirit, I eventually get it up to 99%, and then when I'm at 100%, that's when the course would say God takes the final step, you know, something like that. So anyway, I find that metaphor helpful. It's like, okay, I'm still kind of in the early low duty cycle phases where it's still kind of a hobby, you know. I'm still, you know, more than certainly 5 years ago or definitely 10, 15 years ago, I'm applying the course more and more during the day, but it's still kind of, you know, maybe it's seasoned hobbyist level.
Yes, you know, yeah. And that is a good way to put it, which kind of leads me into a couple of things. One thing I've noticed, and maybe this is age, but I think it does have to do with the course, and that is I'm not as interested in distractions. Like, you know, it used to be every new shiny thing that came along, I wanted to hop right on it. And one thing I find is, you know, somebody will want me to get real excited about something. Oh, look at this, or this person is doing this new therapy, or this light imaging, or, you know, whatever it is. Some new metaphysical, spiritual enlightening. It's the big pizzazz.
Right.
And I just find I'm just not going there. And yet, I don't want to be rude. I don't want to say, you know what, been there, done that. But that's it. It all seems pretty much the same to me. And yet, I also recognize they're all toys. And if your bright, shiny toy takes you where you need to go, then go have the bright, shiny toy. But what I find is most of them just are not as interesting or as exciting to me. And in fact, I think Susan and I may have had this discussion. I had it with somebody. And it just has to do with, you know what? I won't even be able to get through all the material that I want to do in A Course in Miracles in my lifetime.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you're talking about Ken's books. I think that I have almost all of them. Now, I'm not going to say all of them, but I think I have almost all of them, and I will admit I haven't read them. Now, it doesn't help much that I tend to go back and reread the same ones over and over.
I can relate.
But it's just like I've got a shelf full of Course in Miracles books, and I don't want to distract myself with a new shiny toy of how to make myself feel better in the illusion, because that's what it feels like to me. You know, in the dream, this is going to make me feel better, and I'm not saying I won't do anything. Yeah, something else, I mean, you know, like I got the vaccine, you know, for COVID. It's not like I'm going to totally turn my back on everything and say, okay, sickness is a defense against the truth, and I'm just going to, you know, live in this little bubble. I don't want to do that, but I just find the distractions aren't as distracting. It's like they're just not as bright and shiny as they used to be. And in some ways, I mean, that goes to whether or not the course is a hobby. I recognize that more and more and more, it's one of the only hobbies I want.
Uh-huh.
Other than maybe astrology. Love astrology. Love tarot. You know, it's not like I said, it's not like, you know, I let them all go. But it's like it's very important to me because it just resonates. It just resonates as the truth for me. And so that's a good way of putting it, is it's like it's less of a hobby and getting to be, I think, more of a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I was thinking, and maybe now I'm not even sure this goes along with it, but just once again, listening to this workshop and talking about the toys and all, that's it. This whole array of bright and shiny toys. Well, one of the ideas that he introduced, which there again, it's not unique to this workshop, but the idea that anything that encourages you to differentiate, to separate, he says, turn your back on it. you know, you don't even have to get into all the logic and take it all apart and study it and decide if it's good or bad or ugly or whatever it is. It's like from the outset, if somebody's offering you a toy, if somebody's offering you a philosophy, you know, a belief system, an opinion, anything, if it encourages you to differentiate, separate, and or disparage, you know, other people or situations, you don't have to go any further than that. Mm-hmm. You know that that is not, it's not talking about shared interest. That's it. It's just not. And he goes, that ought to raise some red flags. You ought to be suspicious. You know, and somehow that really helped, because I think there is a part of me that feels like I have to study something intensely, even if it's only to tell you why I think it's not right. You know? And it's sort of like, no. You know, if I can tell at the outset, you're not talking to me about peace. You're not talking to me about shared interests. You're not talking about that. You're talking about how to make one group better than another.
Right,
you're talking about separation, then I don't really need to hear anything else to know that I probably don't need to get any more interested in that.
Yeah. As you're sharing that, I was thinking about, the Holy Spirit, aka Jesus, of course, is sort of like an infinitely patient, pet owner with a dog, in this example, with a thing, some toy in his mouth. And just saying, drop it, drop it, drop it. and it just, it's not a demand, but it is a command, but it's not one that has any kind of a threat involved in it. It's just like, you will be happy when you, of your own free will and accord, choose to drop that toy.
Right, leave it.
And, yeah, exactly. Just. Smile, nod politely if that's appropriate, and then just move on to whatever the next thing.
That is what Ken said. I think he said just smile and walk away.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to judge it or tell them why it's wrong. You just smile and walk away. Yeah. Well, and you know what I also loved in this workshop? And by the way, we're not finished. I think we still have one more week. I have enough excerpts to put another show together.
Oh, good. Okay.
But another thing that, you know, I need this continual reminder is that it's not about behavior.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say, oh, this is good, that's bad. No, it's not about behavior. And even Ken says, he goes, when you're contemplating a change or you're contemplating an action, he goes, the first thing you really ought to do is look at what your purpose is and change the purpose from guilt to forgiveness.
Yep.
Then you don't worry about what the behavior is, because you will be guided into doing the loving thing. You know, that whole idea of love in this course, they're not going to teach you how to love. They're going to help you remove the obstacles to love.
Yes.
So, you know, this isn't about deciding what the best behavior is. And see, I still want that. Give me the rules. You know, tell me the behavior. And he's like, no, change your mind about the purpose. And if your purpose is shared interest, if your purpose is forgiveness instead of guilt, then just let the behavior naturally flow from that.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you're saying that, I was thinking, well, there's no place in the course that lists the rules for behavior. There's rules for decision, which is always about the mind and which thought system we're using, but it's nothing about behavior. I was realizing as I was skimming this list of 31 places where the word toy appears, that in Chapter 29, Section 9, there's quite a few references to toys, and starting with the fourth paragraph.
Say that one more time. It's Chapter 9?
Chapter 29.
29, okay.
Section 9, which is the Forgiving Dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have the page reference, but you can probably find it.
They can find it at acim.org.
That's right, at
acim.org. Okay, so go ahead, Bruce.
So what I thought what we could do is maybe read these like three paragraphs that mention toys extensively and then talk about them. How's that sound?
That sounds good. And you've got it in front of you, so you read it.
Okay. So the paragraph 4 begins with, "There can be no salvation in the dream as you are dreaming it. For idols must be part of it. Well, of course, idols refer to the toys. So to save you from what you believe you have accomplished and have done to make you sinful and put out the light within you. Well, there's what you're just talking about. As long as we, you know, make guilt important, we're going to be emphasizing behavior and specifics and making big deals out of much ado about nothing, as Shakespeare would say, right? And then he goes on, little child, the light is there. You do but dream, and idols are the toys you dream you play with. Who has need of toys but children? They pretend they rule the world and give their toys the power to move about and talk and think and feel and speak for them. Yet everything their toys appear to do is in the minds of those who play with them. But they are eager to forget that they made up the dream in which their toys are real, nor recognize their wishes are their own. So, you know, we're so obsessed with appearances and behavior and what things seem to be that it's so easy to forget that I'm not upset for the reason I think. It's the things in the world that seem to be upsetting, you know, when someone takes my toys away or breaks my toys or it thwarts my attempt to get a new toy or whatever it happens to be. It's like, you know, that's my forgiveness classroom, and it's my call for help. My call for the only toy that's going to satisfy, using your previous comments, which is forgiveness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I love that. And yet, you know, that one sentence that you started with, you will not – will you read the first sentence again?
Sure. There can be no salvation in the dream as you are dreaming it.
Exactly. There is no salvation in the dream as you are dreaming it. See, once again, you know, it's kind of a mind twister or feeling like you're living in the Matrix or something. But that's it. There, you are in a dream. There is no salvation here. Mm-hmm. You're never going to find the bright, shiny object in. I mean, you can make yourself happier. You can make yourself more abundant. You can do all these things. But you will never find salvation in the dream as you're dreaming it. You know, that's such a hard thing to wrap my head around.
Yeah, as you're sharing that, I was picturing the shiny toy, and I was thinking, yeah, when with Holy Spirit's help, when we look at it, we instead of seeing made in some foreign country, we look down at the inscription on the bottom of the toy, and it says made by guilt.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one. You need to do a little visual of that. You know.
Because that's when we really look at, you know, the toys of the world and all of our special love-hate relationships with everything and everyone. It's like, well, yeah, we made this up to stay distractive and to stay fixated on behavior. And to, you know, I'm remembering a favorite Bill Murray quote from two different movies is it just doesn't matter. The toys don't matter. But what really does matter is which thought system we're choosing at any given moment. There's only two of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Should I read the next one, or
yes,
are you there?
Yes, although I'm still kind of stuck on that first one, because I remember, actually, I think if Ken either read it in the workshop or he referred to it, and I was like, wow, there is no salvation in the dream as I'm dreaming it.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, read the next.
Okay. Paragraph 5 begins with, nightmares are childish dreams. The toys have turned against the child who thought made them real. Yet can a dream attack? Or can a toy grow large and dangerous and fierce and wild? This does the child believe, because he fears his thoughts and gives them to the toys instead. And their reality becomes his own. Well, obviously, talking about projection there, right? Because mm-hmm. they seem to save him from his thoughts. Yet do they keep his thoughts alive and real, but seen outside himself, where they can turn against him for his treachery to them. He thinks he needs them that he may escape his thoughts, because he thinks the thoughts are real. And so he makes of anything a toy, to make his world remain outside himself, and play that he is but a part of it. Boy, the double shield of oblivion certainly ties into this nicely.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, we think that we made a a dream of separation in our mind, and then because that was way too painful to acknowledge directly, we thought, well, let's get out of that hell quick, and so we made up a world so we could keep projecting, and using the phrase that Susan Dugan uses to summarize the course nicely. So often, I exist, but it's not my fault. Like, oh, well, I've got scapegoats everywhere. I've got toys all over the place that I can bang my fists in the sandbox and cry and make a tantrum because my toys aren't doing what I want them to do, or they've been taken away, or they've been, I broke them, or someone else broke them, but as long as there's something to outside to keep me mindless. That strategy is a pretty watertight one from the ego's perspective.
Yes.
But it may be foolproof from the ego's perspective, but it's not God-proof.
Right. Well, and, somewhere along the line in the workshop, and it kind of ties into this, it's this idea, you're not entitled to your bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
See, now that's a hard thing for me to go to, too, What do you mean I'm not entitled to my bitterness? And yet, that's another thing that's actually been coming up for me, is there have been several situations that, there again, quoting Susan, the first thing out of my mouth is, it's not my fault.
Uh-huh.
It's not my fault. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing myself, whether I say it out loud or whether I'm thinking it, if only, in fact, one thing was amazing because I had done something, or actually I'd seen something in somebody else that was just making me furious. And of course, I'm backtracking from that and going, okay, if that's making you this upset, what is it connecting to? And of course, it wasn't hard to find it. It's because I do the same damn thing. But I didn't want this other person doing it. I wanted to make them guilty for something that I'm trying to change in myself. But you know what I did? Automatically, I found myself going, well, if my third grade teacher hadn't taught me that, and I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? All of a sudden I realized I was coming up with all these defenses about how I learned it and why. Right. And I'm going, really? Are you really going with that? And so it was one of those situations where rarely do I say I kind of step back with Jesus and laugh. But I kind of did because I'm like, really? Is that your story? Is that
seriously?
And please don't say that out loud. That would be pretty darn embarrassing if you did.
Oh, that's great. That's great. We all do that more than we realize. What you shared reminded me of another one of Ken's metaphors of which he had was prolific, was the grab bag of guilt. It's like, well, yes. I've got to reach way back to third grade to pull that one out.
Well, yeah, somebody taught me that. Somebody made me think that was an okay thing to do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just, oh my gosh, these toys, that's it, a grab bag of guilt. And all these toys and, just the whole idea that we so forget, just like the child playing, we forget that we gave them the conversation. We gave them the actions that they're doing. We're directing the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a script that was written long ago, and we're just consummate actors that think that we're on the screen or in the sandbox or in the dream or where whatever metaphor du jour is working for you, and yet we're outside that realm of space and time. We're beyond the toys. We're beyond the dreams. Beyond the stage. We're not quite ready for that. What you were talking about, that unwillingness to heal, is what Freud. And this is something that one of many things that Ken brought out in listening to his talks over the years. That Freud was kind of surprised when he realized that his patients didn't want to heal.
They didn't want to get better.
But what is this crazy resistance? So why would you not want to get better? Well, because, as the Course points out, we have an identity that we made up, and there's the toy. There's the big capital T toy of the ego. Anyway, it's like, as long as I've got a separate identity, whew, that thought system's intact. Yeah.
Well, right. And if I'm responsible, then who is there to blame?
Right.
I mean, it is. You know, I and there again, because I had mentioned it, you know, we want it to hurt less, but we don't want to give it up.
Yeah.
And coming to that realization is shocking.
Yeah.
You know, we say we want to be healed, or we do all these things to make ourselves better, or, you know, to once again elevate the status of the body or material resources. But ultimately, we will just find all kinds of ways to break them down. We will build in the flaws, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to give them up and to kind of be naked, you know, to just to recognize what's really going on.
Yeah. And that reminds me, I'm sounding like a Ken platitude fountain today, I think, perhaps a little bit. But another one of his phrases that I really like is you know, that not only is the emperor naked, but there's no emperor. You know,
right?
I love that, because it's like, okay, well, you know, the emperor has no clothes, right? But yeah, there's no emperor either. I mean, that the ego being the emperor that wants to play with the toys, you know, and, mm-hmm. and we, you know, mixing metaphors crazily here, but you know, as long as we think that there's something to be gained from our toy play, we're going to stay in the sandbox. We're going to stay in that little playground and, you know, throw our tantrums now and then as needed to establish our separate identity. And when things, you know, start going along too well, then, you know, we import, you know, we've written into the script, you know, bullies to come in and kick sand and run away with our toys and you know, and whatever, you know.
And there again, because I recognize I so want to diminish the importance of guilt in the course,
right,
or in my life.
Yep.
And by doing that, I'm not getting to the core of it. Because, right. I mean, where I'm going with this is sometimes you think, okay, so I'm making up the story. I'm the author of the script. I have literally, you know, when they talk about God as oneness, but we have taken the lie and we have burst it into billions of pieces and given all the billions of pieces names, whether they're inanimate objects or they're people, and then they all take voice or they all act out their part in our little stage play. But yep. You look at it and you go, well, why would I possibly dream that up? Why would I possibly need that? And it's because, I mean, ultimately, yeah, because I want to punish myself. I feel guilty and I want to punish myself. But on another level, I go, no, I don't feel guilty. You know, what have I got to feel guilty about? And it's my unwillingness to really uncover that and say, yeah, why would you create that situation? And yet, on some levels, I think we have to be really careful not to go, okay, you're sick, you did something wrong, you created this. You know, that's not the way we want, you know, as Ken says, hit people over the head with the course.
Right.
But on the other hand, when I'm dealing just in my own self or, you know, processing it, why did I create that? You know, why did I need somebody to say that to me or to treat me that way? And or why did I need to create this kind of chaos? And ultimately, it's because, you know, I mean, I can almost see it even in my CA personality. Well, if there's all that chaos out there, then I don't have to, you know, I can't possibly be responsible. I don't need to deal with it. That can't possibly be my fault. Mm-hmm. It's way above me, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, but just, yeah, once again, coming, you know, it's sort of like, I don't like the phrase, watch out, you know, for what you ask for. Well, because I just think it's a negative phrase. But on the other hand, I'm kind of feeling it lately, because as I keep saying, okay, Jesus, I'm ready. You know, show me the way. Okay, come on. You know, I'm ready. I'm ready for the lessons. And it's like, then he shows them to me. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, but the final lesson is always some variation of learning that God's son is innocent. You know, that our guilt is unfounded.
Yes.
We have to certainly move it from unconscious to conscious first by you know, seeing it's not about the other person and I'm never upset for the reason I think. But then, you know, lesson five, but we have to also go to lesson 34, also with Holy Spirit's help, and see that you know, I could see peace instead of this guilt, instead of this toy of believing that the separation happened, that it had these horrific consequences of which I feel horrible about. Not consciously most of the time, but that's where, you know, when we bring it to mind, back to mind with Holy Spirit's help, you know, it seems scary, but when we look at that, the terror, time of terror passes as we begin to trust the gentleness of that inner kindness teacher and see this, like, well, there's nothing there.
Right.
Let's just look at all these things that seem to be terrifying together and see that nothing happened. It was just an idle dream, an idle toy, an idle, you know, a horror flick that we threw on the machine and decided to watch.
Yeah. Well, and to quote Candy, says, "We have given the power to the toys and to the world. The holy instant does not require that we don't have an ego or no impure thoughts. It only requires that we have no thoughts that we would hold on to.
That none that we would keep." Yeah,
yeah, none that we would keep.
That phrase has been really helpful for me lately, just because, you know, if you think about how much crazy stuff goes through your mind on a given day and how quickly, you know, little nothings can become, you know, spun up to be, you know, big problems. If I can catch them early on, just, you know, nanoseconds after they appear, and with Holy Spirit say, oh, do I want to make a big deal out of this? No. Drop it. Just
yes.
open up your jaw and let that toy fall to the floor.
That's right. Leave it. Leave it, Bruce.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a really, really good analogy. I'm going to remember that. I'm going to say that to myself. Leave it, CA. Because, you know, I think I've told you this before. Because I live alone, I guess I do talk to myself out loud. But I'll do something, and I'll just go, stop it. And it's so funny because my dog will just, like, stop at her tracks because she thinks I'm talking to her. But I'm talking to me. I'm just like, stop it. Stop it right now. You're not going down that rabbit hole, you know.
Right, right. It's the old Bob Newhart therapy once again, right?
And why do you say that?
Oh, if you haven't – Google Bob Newhart, stop it, if you haven't seen that.
Oh, I haven't.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. I put it on ACIM blog years ago, and I could send you the link. I'll make a post about our conversation. I'll put it on that too. But it's – if you just Google Bob Newhart and stop it therapy, you'll find it. It's a gem.
Great. Thank you so much. And Lee, that is a great note to end on today.
All right, great. Thank you again, as always, for a wonderful conversation, and I look forward to the next one.
Okay, and do you have any announcements that you'd like to make before we close the show today?
Well, the main one that we already talked about, I suppose, since we haven't really talked that much in the last few months, is the web edition of A Course in Miracles, which I all highly encourage people to not only enjoy but also to support if you're in a position to do that. That's not a solicited comment, just one that I feel, you know, the two foundations, Foundation for A Course in Miracles and Foundation for Inner Peace, have been so, you know, wonderfully helpful in so many people's lives that study the course. I think it's a great opportunity to express that gratitude in whatever way is appropriate. But it's just acim.org and facim.org are the two sister organizations.
Okay, great. And you can still be found at www.acimblog.com.
Correct.
Okay, good.
You can actually drop the www because that's kind of a given.
Redundant?
These days.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is. Okay, acimblog.com. That's where you can find Bruce.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show and talking about toys today. I look forward to some continued conversations now that at least I'm a little more settled. We'll see how that works out. So, everybody, thank you for joining us today. And, Bruce, thank you very much for taking the time.
Oh, likewise.
Okay. And thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver, and I hope that you'll stay tuned because up next, it's Kathleen Peterson and friends. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my special guest, my special toy friend, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life, about spirituality, and about our toys.